Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And just before we start, a quick reminder that tomorrow, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, I'll be joined by Robbie Barwick from the Citizens Party, and we'll be discussing some of the current economic issues which are surrounding us, and we may perhaps touch on the latest with regard to China, submarines and Evergrande. So join me 8 p.m. Sydney tomorrow. Another Monday evening. And so, of course, Edwin is on with me again. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
Well, I'm doing well, Martin. The party's only just getting started.
Absolutely. Plenty to come yet, and don't be late.
No, just get your party hats on. Look, I just sent you a photo of some of my cousins, yeah, Miguel, Ramon, Jose and Tito. They're on the way to the USA. They're on the Greyhound coach tour, Martin, and they sent me a postcard. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it looks pretty crowded there. I wonder whether they're socially distancing.
Look, it doesn't affect them, Martin. They're in the great land of the US of A.
Okay, so rules are different there, and maybe the wind is so strong it doesn't have a chance to settle anywhere, and just the virus just blows away.
Well, that's right, mate. Look, it's like the video that I've also been watching old movies, Gone with the Wind, and I just sent you a snippet there. It's
mean to tell me, Katie Scarlett O'Hara, the terror that land doesn't mean anything to you? Why, land is the only thing in the world worth working for, worth fighting for, worth dying for, because it's the only thing that lasts.
Oh, Paul, you talk like an Irishman.
It's proud I am that I'm Irish, and don't you be forgetting, Missy, that you're half Irish too. And to anyone with a drop of Irish blood in them, why, the land they live on is like their mother. Oh, but there. No, you're just a child. It'll come to you, this love of the land.
You just got to watch that part of the movie over and over again, and everything's fine. It's the land. The valley's in
the
land.
It's all about the land. That's all you need to worry about, and you'll learn it's all about the land.
That's it. So look, it really is all happening, and on top of that, the oldest profession in history is on the ropes. It's catastrophe, Martin. What the hell is going on?
The oldest profession in history. You mean real estate agents?
No, Martin, no. Yeah, multiple brothels coming up for sale during the COVID pandemic. Oh, no, that's real estate, the real estate profession. That's not even a profession, is it?
Well, I don't know. I'm just thinking about which are chicken and which are eggs, the old question, which comes first, the chicken or the egg. Does the real estate agent come first or does the brothel come first?
Both whores. But, hey, you didn't get it from me.
Very good.
It's the end time, Martin. It really is the end times. And next thing you know, they'll be telling us that the countries are actually existing, insolvent. I don't know where I got that from, but, that's what they'll be telling us next. And then it's the end times.
Well, I mean, just look at what's happening over in China with that property conglomerate over there, right? Evergrande. Share price continues to fall. Its bondholders aren't going to get paid out. And people are speculating as to whether this might be another Lehman's thing or whether it's less important. But the point to understand is, if China wanted to bail them out, they would. They could, right? They're not. And that's the point. So the question is, why are they letting it slide the way it is? Is this just a signal of the deleveraging that they want to encourage across China? Or is it something else? And to what extent is it translating risk back to the financial markets and other places?
Look, it's all orchestrated, as I put it out on Twitter last week, and the WeChat chatterers are telling me it's all orchestrated. But then, it's only the WeChat chatterers that tell me these things. I don't have a direct phone line like Robbie Barwick has with Zee, but I'm getting there slowly, climbing up the channels. But the WeChat chatterers are telling me it's orchestrated. And it's for a number of reasons from what they're telling me, Martin. One is to teach the locals to stop investing in old traditional pots of gold, as you would say, you know, and to shock them into investing into new markets, you know, AI, the military, you know, EV technology and production. That's what's really strong there at the moment in a lot of the across the social media platforms there, or WeChat, Tencent, and those the articles that come out on those platforms, the local the local reporters, commentators. It's also orchestrated to really teach the Western world not to invest in their property stocks as well, and to get them to coerce them, would be a better word, to coerce them into investing in it. Once again, into AI, into this new weapons that are being developed, and also EV technology and production. So it's more of a control fall, you might say, that could step in. And also, and the third point that comes out really, really strongly, that resounds really strongly from the chatter that I've been having with our WeChat chatter is the fact that they're also waiting for the right time and the right point in time or market price where they will also step in and say, hey guys, we are now going to JV with you, and we will have one of our personnel sit next to the CEO, CFO, and so forth. We'll have them sitting here. So that now what that price is, who knows? I mean, I'm getting figures of about below 50%. Some are saying below 40%. But whatever it is, it's certainly there to teach the locals and the world a lesson. And let's not forget that this is just one of many companies that are doing developments in China. Yes, it is a significant company. Yes, it is. It is making headwinds worldwide. It is attracted the attention. But for that reason, is those three points that I raised, Martin, as to why the Chinese government are more in control than what the Western world would like to think it is.
Well, I think that's the point. And, they are taking a strategic position clearly, and pulling certain levers and not pulling other levers. And as you say, there's some significant fallout. And talk about fallout, the iron ore price continues to go south as well.
Well, that's another point that the WeChat chatterers are really being vocal on over the weekend, and that is the fact that a lot of these industrial provinces, or where you find a lot of the medium tier steel producers, their quota has been cut by 40 to 60%, Martin. That's huge. They can hardly keep the doors open. The story that they've been told is that China's going green as well, and they're going to start contributing to the these global targets of clean energy and so forth. But to do it the way they've done it, I think there's a lot more going on behind the scenes, because you don't just go from 100% production to 40 or 50 or 60% production from one week to the next. These are the small, the SMEs that are basically employ the majority of the working force in China. So it's the Western media won't pick this up, or if they do, it'll be another 2 or 3 or 4 weeks down the track before they realize what's going on. So they're still trying to work out why there's a Chinese saying to kill the thousand, they're taking out 800 of their own, meaning to basically make a point to the Western world, they're going to also lose themselves. But that's a strategy that they've taken for quite a number of years with many of the positions that they've taken, both financial, economic, as well as from a global footprint, from a global choice of things that they wanted to rule over in terms of production and so forth. So it's a wait and see game with regards to iron ore. Some of the people have been asking me, Martin, and no doubt they've also been asking you, is how is this Evergrande fiasco, how is that going to affect the local markets or our local property markets? Would be one of the questions that I've been getting. I don't know about you.
Yes, I've had quite a few people ask me that, and of course it's a bit uncertain, but we know quietly some of the Chinese owners in Australia have been putting their properties on the market and just liquidating them. You know, I wouldn't say it's a massive surge yet, but there's definitely something stirring.
Well, look, I've been able to also speak with some of my legal eagles and your friends, and they're already seeing files coming across their desks of mortgagee in possession files, which predominantly, although they're Sydney-based firms, they are for banks basically taking over properties that are based in Melbourne.
Yep.
And these are properties that are predominantly in high-rise developments and apartments. So that's been rather interesting. But I tell you what my take is on this, Martin. And I shared with one of our followers that I had the pleasure of meeting on the weekend in the North Shore. And that is this, that the people that have bought into off-the-plan apartments and high-rise developments or investment properties from China are generally people, you know, the two classes of people: one that want to get money out and, you know, to put it in a safe haven, and the other class of people are the very high risk taker individuals. And these high risk takers that have bought off to plan apartments here in Australia, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, wherever, they're also would be people that would have also bought into stocks of Evergrande. So my theory is that there will be a portion, you know, whether it's 10%, 15%, 20%, I don't know, but there will be a significant amount of people, these high risk takers that are bought and off to plan apartments to make money here in Australia, that would also be tied up with the shortcomings of Evergrande, and they will lose money. So again, that'll add to the pile of properties that are apartments, predominantly apartments, that are going to be put on the chopping block by the banks and sold off.
Yeah, I agree. The apartment market is looking sicker and sicker. I've had a number of conversations this last week with people who've got a portfolio of high-rise investments, and they've got recent valuations all down from where they were previously. More than half of them were vacant. They were mostly in Sydney and Melbourne. And, you know, the real question is, well, how far do you cut the losses and just sell at any price to get out? Because the forward view, I think, probably is that this isn't going to recover quickly. And even if the immigration taps were opened, it's no guarantee that you're going to find people flooding in and suddenly wanting to rush in and rent these high-rise apartments. And there's such a huge amount of supply and more coming, because they're still building more now. So it's a really tricky situation for a number of investors, particularly in the high-rise areas of Sydney and Melbourne, I think.
Well, that's right. And again, a lot of people forget the fact that the government's in bed, or the government, the different governments, state and federal governments, and you know, politicians are in bed with institutions that are building and have been stockpiling on land to build high-rise developments for build-to-rent development. So they've got to fill those in first in order for the institutions not to do their ass. They're going to be in direct competition. They are in direct competition with the individual investors, whether they be foreign investors or local investors of these apartments in the central hubs or the other hubs where that were dominated or that were the focus for tertiary education for these international students and renters. So I don't believe that we're going to get those international students and renters, not in the near future, particularly with this mandates that we're going through now with this whole pandemic. Yes, there is a drive to open up the borders, but my understanding is that the people that will be allowed to come into Australia would have to have vaccines that are FDA approved. So unless they are ones that are approved, well, you know, a lot of these people from Asian countries can whistle Dixie, unless they go to Singapore and unless they go to Malaysia first and then get get those funny, dodgy documents in there and then come over.
Funny, dodgy documents. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? And, you know, talking about things that we're not sure about, there's something happening in Melbourne with regard to the construction sector, which looks to me to be quite serious.
Well, that is interesting how this whole thing's going to play out. I mean, this is the CFMEU and its members, and they're going toe to toe with these mandates. Whether this is going to bring construction to a halt in Melbourne, it's only going to play out. It's going to play out very, very quickly. One thing for sure is that you've got a very, very angry workforce. And it's, you know, from my understanding of it, it's not in relation to that they're not given Vegemite sandwiches or a meat pie and sauce at morning tea. It's a little bit more than that. It's more to do with with mandates once again, and it's created a stir. Now they're calling for a complete stop in construction. Now, how that plays out is going to be, it's going to be devastating to the construction industry for sure. And whether it rolls into the residential, sections as well, or whether is it just going to be focused more on the high rise developments and the commercial, where the unions do have a very strong footprint, or is it really going? Are the tradies going to lock arms? And are going to get support from all sectors, from the residential as well as the commercial. This is going to be in a watch and see, and make sure you've got plenty of popcorn and you don't have and you've got plenty of fingernails to chew on, because it is going to get very, very interesting. Unfortunately, it may also get very violent, and how that translates into Sydney is also going to be. Another thing to watch out for, predominantly, once again, because of all the pain that people are suffering and going through, it's really going to be critical for the governments to act wisely as to how they resolve these issues. And I hope they do get resolved, because there's a lot of pain out there, Martin. I see it every day as we drive around and see many businesses close down, row after row of shops. Small operators, it's very, very painful. And unfortunately, like you and I said, even from last year, we said 2021 was going to be a year that we need to put our heads down, tail up, and work hard, because 22 was really going to be the kicker. And it's playing out that way, unfortunately.
No, it is. And it's worth noting in my SME surveys, a lot of small traders are absolutely hand to mouth at the moment. So, whether they will actually turn around and stop work, they might be forced to perhaps, but is a real question. But if they do, that's going to put further downward pressure on momentum with regard to construction sector. A lot of houses and apartments are now dragging the chain in terms of completion because of the fact they can't get the materials, they can't get the labour. This is just going to be another sort of circuit around that particular trap. And I have to say that the video that show was showing in Melbourne was just quite disturbing. We won't play the audio because it's just too shocking. But there was a certain amount of anger, wasn't there?
Oh, look, there is a lot of anger, and as I deal with tradies, every week as they assist our clients, and also the work that I'm doing around the properties as well. So, and a lot of them are very angry. A lot of them are there's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of frustration in that workforce. And I've now had to put things on hold and wait, because a couple of weeks ago I lost chip rockers. Now I've got to wait for the carpenters to do work elsewhere. Or if I want them to come over, I have to basically match what they've been paid for at their other jobs and more to make it worth their while, or just simply wait. And this is going to be the how things are going to play out. So like we said, unless you're buying right and you're buying with consciously, and you know what you're buying, and you're unraveling all those hidden issues that the vendors and selling agents have tried to hide, unless you can see what you're up for, it's getting harder not only to get things done, but it's it's also getting harder to buy the right property that's not going to cost you a fortune in the future as well. So this is a lesson learned, and hopefully a lesson that people are adhering to and paying attention, close attention to, because you know, the more that these things go on, the more that these strikes go on or stop works that go on. One thing that I know for sure is that tradies are very loyal to their cause. And I want to think that whether it's the commercial or high rise, whatever, you know, it is tradies will lock arms and they will stick together. I mean, my father was a tradie, in the mining industry, and in a way, at times he was very, very vocal about joining and locking arms. Other times he didn't want to because obviously he had a lot of mouths to feed, but he had no choice. But I would say 70% of the time he was, he was all in boots and all to support his mates.
Absolutely. Well, it was certainly not surprising me to see some of that following on. And our next article is quite interesting. In fact, it's quite close to home insofar that I helped to get this research up. So this is a Sydney Morning Herald article this morning by Shane Wright, quoting mortgage stress. And in fact, what happened was there that I do mortgage stress at a postcode level, and the University of New South Wales took that data and remapped it as an electoral level. And basically, Shane Wright wrote this up and basically highlighted that there was a significant set of issues, particularly in southwestern Sydney. And the electorate with the highest level of stress is Werriwa. And there are some significant factors about that particular postcode, which is worth just understanding, right? This is one of those high growth corridors, a lot of new development, little infrastructure, a bit of flooding and a few other things too.
Well, that's correct. I'd read the article and then I also watched the video that you posted today. The chickens have come home to roost and need some bacon and eggs. I think that was the title of the video. I'm not quite sure. But it was a rather interesting video. So I was listening to that. And, I just wanted to highlight tonight what this postcode and perhaps delve a little bit deeper into why I feel that there's a lot of mortgage stress there, I just noted down a number of points. One is obviously it's an area with a lot of new developments, a lot of new subdivisions, and you got a very broad range of subdivisions. You got your subdivisions, your greenfield areas, and you've got your where a lot of the work wasn't done to, probably a lot of the engineering wasn't adhered to, perhaps, and there being a lot of other mainstream media articles in the past with regards to some of the issues in some of those backfill areas in those lands, and predominantly because these are flood prone areas, low lying areas, which in the past were pastoral lands, and now we've built them up, but also. What we have there is you've got these subdivisions of 320 to 450 square meter blocks of land, which are going just tipping over the million mark now for a house and land package. But you've also got your 650 square meter blocks of land with homes, getting closer to the 2 million. I mean, these are monstrous homes built on 650 square meters. The setbacks, are absolutely. You're almost encroaching on your neighbour's land if you have a balcony on the second level. As far as I'm concerned, there's no real setbacks, and you've got these monstrous homes, and they're tipping close to the 2 million. So with no infrastructure, or with very little infrastructure, I feel that a lot of the punters, the property punters that bought there, one, they were forced to buy there because it was the next place to go to because things closer to Liverpool would just became more and more expensive. The established homes became more expensive, and so they went further out, and they want to buy something new. But also the apart from this, there's I can't help but think that they're all a lot of them are gambling on this, on the Badgerys Creek Airport, and the gambling on the rise in property values due to the potential, and I say with capital letters and in, you know, inverted commas, you know, potential international highly trafficked international airport that we're going to have in Badgers Creek, and a potential and a huge upside. So is it going to happen in 10 years? Is it going to happen in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years? Are you and I going to see it in our lifetime, Martin? You know, I'm a 50-50 call on that. So these are some of the underlying factors. And so when you've got these areas that are also predominantly, I feel, I don't know what your surveys say, but that would be more the blue collar workers, more so the blue collar workers, that young people, young professionals that are prepared to commute, were prepared to sacrifice the commute for work. But you've got a number of things now. You've got a reduction in hours. If you're working from home, even if you are in a high paid profession in the IT industry, there are some banks now saying, well, if you want to work from home and you don't want to come into work in the office, well, you're gonna have to take a 25% pay cut wage bargaining or wage bartering scenarios that are coming up. So there is, I can't see but having mortgage stress in these areas.
Well, there's a couple of observations. Firstly, there are a lot of first-generation Australians in the area, so in other words, relatively new migrants, very much borrowed up to the gills on the assumption of, income from at least two, perhaps three members of the family, except that, of course, with COVID, that's all changed now, and some people are getting much less hours than they thought. And the fact, of course, also that these are quite often relatively new buyers, so they've had a mortgage quite recently, which means that they've been buying at a very high point in the cycle in terms of prices. So very high prices, highly leveraged, highly stressed in terms of the income and expenditure. And the cost of living out there have risen significantly as well. That's the other thing that comes through in the survey. So people are getting squeezed dramatically. Final point to make there, Edwin, if you drew a map of the COVID infection rates around South Western Sydney and mapped the mortgage stress data to it, there's a horrible correlation. So we know that some of these southwestern suburbs, like Fairfield, for example, and elsewhere, are places where the virus has been rampant. And that's because people have got no option but to essentially try to keep working, even if they're infected, even if they have to travel around and all those things. So there's a whole bunch of consequences and correlations, which is what we were trying to get at with this particular piece of work, right? And there's an implication too about what happens at the next election, because a lot of these areas are actually quite marginal seats. And the question is, will they jump ship and basically go and vote in the opposition rather than actually give the incumbents another term? And there's a fairly good chance they might, because they would feel that they've been very hard done by over the last few months.
Yeah, look, that's a wait and see. I think a lot of the independents and the new Liberal Party are certainly making some headwind, and there's a few others that that people are paying a lot of attention to. I don't know whether it's just me that's reading too many tweets, or from the conversations that I'm having with my family and friends that live in a lot of these areas, they are sort of leaning more towards independence and trying to do something, trying to hopefully make a change for independents to have a greater voice so that they can speak for the local community, as opposed to these career politicians that have got no clue as to what the needs are. Their messaging is so convoluted. The people, these new migrants, these people in these areas that are, English is not a first, in a lot of cases, is not a first language. There's a lot of confusion, as we've said before. I'm confused as to what the mandates are, let alone, on a day-to-day, week-by-week basis, let alone people that are trying to cope and trying to not only cope from a sense of communication, but also cope from from also trying to provide for the families and the desperation and the pain that comes with it, and they'll do whatever it takes to put on the table, because that's the first and primary focus, other than call it adhering to mandates, or other than trying to make sense of what the politicians that have double speak are saying, because it's usually a rule for thee but not for me. So yeah, all these things come into play. But yeah, look, the demographics is a very interesting one in these areas, Martin. It is certainly very interesting, and that has a lot that's obviously playing out. And culturally, people have religious beliefs, living styles. As we said before, when we spoke about why the WeChat chatterers were saying that that COVID was rampant in the construction sector, and that's because a lot of the big brothers that control these little brothers, the teams of offsiders and labourers, they all live in homes in a community to save as much as they can, and they all eat from the same pot. They all living, you've got four, five, in some cases six couples or groups of small families living in a three, four bedroom home. So of course, it's this whole thing that the governments just don't understand, because they're so fixated on a short term business model plan, or a short term plan, a political plan to stay in power. And this is going back to Evergrande. This is where we get it all wrong. Where China have got the 5-year plans, they've got their 10-year plans, but they've also got the generational plans, the 30-year plans and 40, 50-year plans. And that's why, going back to the Evergrande, the WeChat chatterers feel it's a controlled control process to bring into play what we spoke about earlier on. And it's part of the plan. It's part of the bigger plan. But we can't say that our politicians have any plan whatsoever other than to stay in power and to get as many brown paper bags or Aldi reusable bags that they can whilst they're in power.
Well, I agree with that. But I also make another point, Edwin. A lot of the commentators, a lot of the economists, a lot of the politicians, live in wealthy, leafy suburbs, and just have no idea what it's really like out in Western Sydney in these suburbs that we've been talking about, right? And the social consequences and all the other stuff that we see, and anybody who can see, if you go look, right? I just feel they're completely disconnected from reality. And, there are thousands and thousands of people who are really up against it. And I'm fascinated every time I make my mortgage stress reports. I do them every month, as you know. The number of people on Twitter and elsewhere say, no, that can't possibly be right. And I'm thinking, you just don't know what's going on. You don't know what it's like in the real world, right? Because you are in this privileged ivory tower where effectively you are still getting paid top dollar for doing perhaps not that much. In the real world, this is real grief. This is real, stress on people. And unfortunately, it turns into social consequences and, even things like violence and other criminal activity. It all flows off the back of it. And so I think a lot of people, a lot of politicians are not close enough to what's really going on to have any sense of what they should be doing.
No, not only the politicians and the local council members and so forth, but it's also the reporters, the majority of the reporters, not all, but the majority of the reporters that also live in their Eiffel Towers in the West, in the terraces where they can ride the bicycle to work.
I must say, living in the Eiffel Tower as opposed to the Ivory Tower, I love it.
Freudian slip.
You must have been thinking of French submarines.
Yeah, French submarines. And I was thinking of Icon and Tower and all that. All these areas where most of them live. Totally disassociated. In their own little bubble. But like what I've said before, Martin, it's it you know, where the an industry or a group of people that have had wage rises in the last 2 years, and it's the public sector and the politicians. I can't think of anybody else that's had a wage increase.
That's right.
You know, a lot of people have, their incomes have been cut by 25%, 30%, 40%. They've been cut to zero if you're a small business operator, a small business owner, particularly in the hospitality or in retail. So your lives have been shattered. But another point to this article, Martin, that and also one of the points that you alluded to in your video with regards to this article was the mortgage stress. And I think the viewers need to understand is there's a difference between mortgage stress or rental, rental stress, and when a bank actually steps in to take possession of a property, and that from my timeline between now and when we start seeing banks coming in, I dare say it's going to be years before they will be allowed to walk in. Like I've said before, it's going to be. The first ones that are going to go are the ones that have got caught up in commercial leases. They'll be the first to go, and they'll be the first to suffer the consequences and suffer the pain. Before a lot of these areas and a lot of these places that you allude to and that you've brought out in your surveys and in your reporting, I dare say that they're going to be. They've almost got a lifeline, and look, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to say they've got a lifeline of about 3 to 4 years before something serious and major really happens. So between now and then, although we talk about mortgage stress, there's a big difference. And I say 3 to 4 years, not being facetious, not just being outlandish, but because I look at other areas of the my legals friends, what they're telling me how long procedures are taking through the different courts from the from NCAT, from the tribunal to all the way to the Supreme Court, how long things are taking unless you've got a shitload of money to outlay and unless you're the plaintiff, not the defendant.
No, I agree with that. The point there is that mortgage stress often doesn't lead to delinquency and default, because essentially by the time people get into severe difficulty, they decide they have to sell. So they quite often sell. In a rising market, they might be able to sell and get out. They still don't have much equity left, but the bank can get paid out. Of course, that changes if, in fact, two things happen, one of two things. Interest rates started to rise. That would put huge pressure on. The second is if, in fact, banks started to put more pressure on and, the market turned. But a lot of banks are putting severe pressure on people to get them to sell before they default, before they end up in the delinquency bucket. Because what the banks are trying to do is to keep the delinquency rate really, really low. And I agree with you in terms of the timeline. So typically, somebody who is in mortgage stress will struggle through for a number of years, perhaps doing a couple of refinances on the way through, that I might get a couple of loans, personal loans, or use buy now, pay later, or credit cards. I mean, there's a lot of things that people can do to grab more credit. But what you do is you build up the burden of credit to the point where it's unsustainable. And that's the point at which then, a tipping point is created, and then they get out. Now, many of them will get out and sell the property, pay off all their debts. And that will look like an organized, ordinary sale. It won't appear in any statistics in terms of a distress sale, right? But it is a distress sale. And the delinquency rates themselves are much, much lower, although actually they're upticking slightly from where they were a few months ago. But you can't measure the state of the property market just on the delinquency rate, which is why the mortgage stress statistics are so important, because it's an early leading indicator of building trouble ahead. And just bear in mind that if you go back a couple of years before COVID, we had around 31% of households in stress, mortgage stress across the country. It's now 42%, right? That's 1.5 million households which are exposed now. That's a lot of households. And so there's a lot of grief under the hood to come out yet. But as you say, it's going to be a slow burn. It's not going to be a sudden crunch.
Unlike the 2004, 2005, 2006, where it all just unraveled very, very rapidly. It was incredible, and it took out a lot of the small would-be developers at that time as well. And we weren't we really had there was a lot of choice, and there was more property on the market than what we have now. This is another thing. Like as these properties, this stress, the people that are in stress, whether it be financial stress because of the small businesses going. Going bad, or the suffering that they're experiencing because of these rolling lockdowns now, there's still not enough. There's still not enough properties on the market in terms of homes or freestanding homes, as what we've been talking about, to really make a big impact. We're still only haven't tipped the 5,500 listings on Domain as yet, and we're into the third week of spring. Now, they have gone up by about 300-350 from 3 weeks ago, but we still got to see these numbers clock up rapidly to even get us back to last year's figures, which were which we almost hit the 9,000 freestanding homes listed on Domain. So until we see that, and until people are more at ease to put the properties on the market, and because there is a lot of chatter with the agents that I've been talking to, they are holding on to listings, they are holding on to prospective listings that they've said they will go on market, but only when they can have the freedom to also travel in the state, because a lot of them do want to do that. They want to migrate either to the Central Coast or Queensland, and a number of them are talking about WA. And these are agents that I talk to on a weekly basis, and they tell me what they, obviously the listings that they've got coming up. Some of them are signed up, a good 50-60% of them aren't signed up, but the vendors have given them, clear signs that they will be listed once they feel a lot more free to also get out and search for their next property themselves, because at the moment, a lot of people can't.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there's a lot to play here. As you say, the listings numbers are relatively low, although if you look carefully, there's still a high rise around. We know there's more coming on potentially as well. So it depends where you look as well. Before we close, we have to, of course, as every week, of course, on our post, we have to talk about underquoting. We have another story about underquoting. What a surprise.
Look, finally, I was absolutely gobsmacked when I saw this this article in Domain that Melbourne Real Estate Agency is fined for underquoting an Armidale property in Victoria. I mean, somebody forgot to give this agency the memo or the legal that represented them in the court, if they were represented. But the best defense in Victoria is blame the vendor. That is the best defense. I mean, you hear that over and over and over again from REI Victoria, from the CEO, CFOs, and all the other idiots that make up the board. You blame the vendor. It's always the vendor's fault. So that's the best defense. So I don't know what happened, and I don't know what idiot defended this poor bastard that got fined. The office that got fined close to $30,000. I was gobsmacked. I know what happened there, man.
It should be the instant defense. The vendor made me do it.
Exactly. That's it. The vendor made me do it. Judge, Your Honor, magistrate.
I was following orders.
Your Holiness. Exactly. I know. I would have done a better job for half the price.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, well, there's still a lot of underquoting going on around the place, I might add, in Sydney. But, we've covered it so many times, and I keep getting these stories from individuals who said, I've just experienced it again. The property ended up somewhere very different from where the guide was, and, there's no justice, there's no recourse. Local trading standards people just really aren't taking it seriously still. It's just part of the furniture and people are just playing with it.
Yeah, look, and I guess that leads to the tip of the week, Martin. Here's the tip of the week. Very, very simple, very straightforward. Don't ask, what is the guide? Don't ever ask that question. Forget about the question, what's the guide? When they rock up to the real estate and say, oh, what's the guide? you know, the real estate, they're programmed to give you that bullshit figure anyway, which is, you know, 10, 15, 20% below what the expectations really are. That's the question you should be asking. What is the vendor's expectation? Yeah. What have you told? Not what's the guide, what's the price guide?
Yep.
Because rephrase that and ask them, what is the vendor's expectation?
Yeah, that's great advice, Edwin, because those two things are completely different, right? Because one is actually effectively the marketing bull spin, and the other is actually more to do with what the vendor's really thinking, and that's what you want to know about.
Yeah, that's correct, because the vendor's expectation is going to be based on, don't forget, the vendor's had 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 real estate officers or agents in their premises pitching their marketing strategy, pitching to them what they're going to get. So in the vendor's mind, they've already got a figure. You know, we could go on about, you know, what's on the agency agreement. We can go on and, you know, go around in circles. You're never going to get to see it. So, that's how my team. That's what I tell my, you know, I've told my guys. We talk. You know, after they tell us and they divulge to us what their guide is, then we say, great. That sounds all great and, you know, wonderful. Now, could you please tell me what's the vendor's expectation based on the information that you've gathered so far?
Yep, no, it's absolutely right. That is precisely the right question. And by the way, it's also worth assembling information about properties that have sold relatively recently, not going to the portals and just looking at the estimated value, right? Because that's sort of, you know, spin, right? And will often be way over what it really is. But actually get the historical sales data. You can quite quickly home in on the similar area, look at similar types of property, and that also gives you a very good lever. So if you start with the vendor expectation, and you can then come and say, well, in this area, you know, here are 4 examples that where prices sold recently, you've then got a very strong platform to be able to actually go in and make a bid that's defendable.
Exactly. And then add on that. Don't forget to add the 10% for emotion. That people, depending on, I say 5 to 10%, depending on what, whether or not the property has been, recently renovated or it hasn't been renovated. So there's a lot of factors that come in and come to play. There are a couple of people that I follow on Twitter that came up with very ingenious ways. Obviously, these are IT gurus and they've gathered a lot of information from everywhere, and they basically follow my train of thought, which is always when I look at the value of a property, I look at the land component, the replacement value, the intrinsic value of the property, then the inclusions, fixtures and fittings, and I make assessments in that way, and then I calculate what it would cost to get certain things repaired based on the square meter cost for renovations. Is it a single level? So all these things obviously come from experience. That's why I say to people, I can give you some pointers along the way to help you to buy a property or to give you some pointers, but I can't really teach you how to buy a property or how to how to determine what's of good value or great value on a property, because the good is the enemy of the best. That's learned over the years. But the thing going back is, as you said, Martin, now you put out, you drill down product. You help the people drill down as to, you really hone in into areas, streets, suburbs, and all these things play a big role. And never forget, also look at what community are you chasing, meaning what is the demographic that you're chasing, based on the schools, based on the ethnicity. All that plays a big role as to the values of properties as well. And then you throw the other thing in, and then you try to toss a coin and try to figure out what our powers to be, our premiers, are going to do, whether they're going to lock us down again or not, or whether they're going to open up the doors and the floodgates are going to come pouring in, and you're going to be chasing your tail and then looking a little bit further afield to secure that piece of land that's of real value, as opposed to the dwelling on it.
That's all in the land, Edwin. It's all in the land. Heard that somewhere this evening.
That's it, man. No, look, I've had certainly a bit of fun tonight and with everything, but I'm hoping and praying that things, calm down a little bit. I've got my fingers crossed for all our viewers out there, and I am hoping to see that the word on the street is, from a lot of sources that we've gathered, is that a lot of agents are holding on to new listings, but it's the governments that, and this fear, not knowing, this uncertainty of not knowing whether or not, if I sell my home, am I going to be able to have the time to go and buy something else? Can I, am I going to be able to go look for something else? It's this whole uncertainty that's still holding the numbers down, unfortunately. But fingers crossed that things will change. They say that we're going to have the big celebration day on the 11th of October, where we're going to be released. Our chains and shackles are going to be unlocked, and we're going to go out and enjoy the sun. That's what they tell me, Martin.
Keep my fingers and toes crossed, and we'll see what happens. As always, Edwin, very informative and useful conversation tonight. Thanks very much for that, and we'll do it all again next week, eh?
Yeah, for sure. And keep your eyes on two things: what happens with the construction sector, with the unions, and the other one is obviously going to be continue to keep an eye on the new for sale listing numbers, as we roll more into the spring season.
Yeah, and we'll report on those as we go forward. Thanks, Edwin. See you soon.
Yeah.
Bye.